Welcome to How Did This Get Played, the podcast where we review the worst and weirdest and wiggerest video games of all time. This is our 93rd time we've covered the game Death Stranding from 2019. We have no guests anymore.
It's just us. We're all that's left. I'm Nick Weiger Jr. I miss my old man.
It's me, Matt Apodaca. Hello, everyone.
I don't understand why old Matt Apodaca sounds like Bill Clinton, but he does.
It's just a thing that's happened as he's aged. I don't know who Bill Clinton is. I was born after his presidency.
Wait, why is the son of Nick Weiger so old?
That's how long we've been doing it.
That's how long it's been.
And I think what happened, if you remember this, Heather, when Nick was diagnosed with that rare disease that he has old cum, and so his babies come out old. So he's 24, but he's old.
I'm 24, but I'm old.
If you're joining us for the first time, this is the 9,000th episode of a show that we somehow cannot leave. And we've had some complaints over the last few years that we have to stop recording episodes about Death Stranding, but we're only now getting to some of the subsystems that are present in the game.
Let's really dig into the waypoints on the map. We haven't talked about that in depth, but it's a pretty robust waypoint system.
You can set your own waypoint. You can also create your own path to a waypoint that you've set on the map.
My dad was killed in the Alien War.
He was fighting on the aliens.
He was a hero for the aliens.
He was a hero for a spy who led the aliens into the cities. They said they could fix his cum for him.
I want to give a quick read for our advertiser. Quantum Cube. You know, we all need quantum cubes these days. Well, you can get yours at the Quantum Cube outlet. Use promo code BLADE for that cube that manipulates time and space that we all need to have with us at all times in our current reality.
Put your cube directly into your urethra. Well, it's time to start the show.
I miss my dad.
We catapult cargo and do gratuitous but sick tricks off of ramps as we revisit Death Stranding again with Death Stranding Director's Cut as Kojember continues this week on How Did This Get Played? How Did This Get Played? The show where we discuss the worst and weirdest and Worcester sauciest video games of all time. That third W is by @sister_creep, who tells me, as a native of Worcester, England, I'd be happy to help you with pronunciation. I hope I got it close enough for your purposes. Submit yours at GetPlayedPod, #www. I'm Nick Weiger, but I'm not that Weiger, along with my co-hosts.
Oh, boy.
I mean, that's great. Nick, that was great. I'm Heather Ann Cliff.
Okay. And I'm Matt, podcast producer host,
I'm Sam, everyone.
Great. Well.
Very good.
Hi, I'm Sam, everyone, and welcome back, Bucket. I didn't get it at first. Appadaka, I was like, I don't know what's happening.
My name is what I do.
Your name is what you do. Yes.
Gotcha.
But okay. But you would just be podcast producer in the game. Like yeah. That would be your name. Like you would, the Matt part would be gone.
That's yeah. You're right. Fuck.
No, you're fine.
No.
And they'd be delivering you 14 no. metric tons of Pokemon cards.
Yeah, okay, I'm back in.
We're saying all this because we continue Hideo Kojima, a month-long deep dive into the games of Hideo Kojima. But before we descend into this particular gaming hell, before we exit our safe houses and risk exposure to Timefall, it is first time to briefly touch on a game we're currently enjoying by spending 70 seconds in gaming heaven. And Matt, I have something to talk about. Tell me when to begin.
Go for it.
I played through this cute little... soothing, I'll say, in the presence of our guest, and we'll talk about that in a second, a game called Unpacking, which is an indie game. It's on Game Pass right now. It's developed by Witchbeam, and just has this charming pixel art and this really just tranquil score by the sound designer and composer is Jeff Van Dyck. And let's play a little bit of this score while I talk through it, Matt. So here's what the experience of the game is. You're looking at an isometric perspective, and you're in like an apartment or some other residence, and you just got a bunch of moving boxes, and you just take items out one by one, and you put them where they should go. So hey, there's a spatula, that goes in a drawer in a kitchen. You got a DVD case, that goes on a shelf in the entertainment center, and so on. And this music, this kind of music or a similar track is playing, and you're just doing this in like eight different residences, and you're learning more and more about this character. It's the same character on this odyssey over this course of...
Up.
All right. Anyway, it's a great little experience, and it's like it's just about 4 hours of gameplay, so I thought it was a lot of fun.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
If you found like some towels or something, like some bath towels, where would you put that?
Outside.
Outside?
No, you actually get punished for putting things in the wrong place. Not punished, but you can get like, you're not supposed to put things in the wrong places.
Okay.
So like a bath towel, yeah, you got to put on a towel rack or you got to put on a shelf in the bathroom.
Okay.
Or the laundry room if you're in a residence with a laundry room.
Hey, you could be so lucky.
If you could be so lucky, you're coming up in the world. But yeah, it's got like, it's cute, it's charming, and it's fun, and it is very, it's just like a, you put you in a very sort of tranquil zen state, and I think that's the intention of the developers. So I think it achieves its aims.
I have it downloaded on Game Pass, and I can't wait to play it. It looks like a nice little relaxing time.
Did you do that while I was talking?
What do you mean? Oh yeah.
Like, did you open up Game Pass?
Yeah, I was like, oh, Nick's talking. Let me just get this real quick. So shut the shut up.
Nick, I want to say,
yeah,
I don't think you've ever gone that hard during 70 seconds in Gaming Heaven. It felt both atmospheric, but also pre-transcribed. Like the words were just flowing out of you. You set a real mood and a real tone for this podcast episode that I don't think we're going to be able to live up to. And I want, if you're a new listener out there and you're checking us out for the first time, we will never be that good again.
Yeah,
that was smooth.
If this is your first episode, the third episode of Death Stranding that we are doing,
that's my jumping in point.
Yeah.
Death Stranding 3.
Yeah. No, it is true, Nick. It must feel nice to talk about something that you really really like for once.
Well, hey, we're gonna do it.
Yeah. I
even
guess we're
more.
Gonna do it again, huh?
We're gonna keep doing it. We're gonna keep this ball rolling, and we've got a wonderful guest to do it with. And thank you for saying nice things. And our guest I'm very excited to have on the podcast, a musician and writer from the podcast Strong Songs and Triple Click, which I listen to every week. Kirk Hamilton is here. Hi, Kirk.
Hey, hello. Hello to all three of you. It's really nice to be here.
Hi, Kirk.
Hi, Kirk.
Hi. Hey, hello.
Kirk, thanks for making time for us. And you are sitting in an environment where, you know, you have a bunch of guitars behind you. You are a musician. I'm curious because, like, I think this is a pretty universal experience for anyone who plays games with regularity. But like, music and sound design has such an impact on my enjoyment of a game. Like, do you feel like that affects you differently? Does that affect your perception of a game particularly because that is your background?
I mean, sure, I noticed the music, right? I used to, when I wrote about video games, I would always write about the music, and the music is a really important part of any video game. I actually think of a lot of video games as music sometimes because they're actually very similar in a lot of ways, or they occupy a similar part of my brain. Like, I'll find, especially recently, you know, I've been practicing a lot of guitar because I'm not actually very good at guitar, despite the guitar on my wall. I'm a saxophonist, first and foremost. That's like what I went to school for, and I can play saxophone. Guitar is a weird math equation of an instrument, and I've been doing a lot of practicing. And that, you know, requires this sort of headspace with the metronome and the repetition, and you kind of get better and better. And I'll find that, you know, if I'm playing a really tough game, I had this thought on playing the PS4 God of War. I was trying to beat the Valkyrie Queen, which is the toughest Valkyrie boss in that game. It's a really hard boss fight. And I was like repeating it over and over and over again. And I found that I didn't have any mental bandwidth to practice music while I was doing that because the processes were so similar in my brain. So I think a lot about that. I think a lot about the similarities between actually playing games and playing music, almost more than I think about the sound. Though, of course, I'm like paying attention to the sound, but a lot of times it's that they actually, the two acts feel very similar to me.
It's brain-body connection, right?
Yeah.
I feel like my battle against the Valkyrie Queen and how difficult that was when I played God of War has prevented me from learning to play music for my entire life. So I do feel, I totally get that. Like, it was a hard fight, and you know.
It's true. The thing about learning guitar is also when you begin practicing guitar, it grabs you and it slams your face into the ground every single time that you're about to learn how to play guitar, which is pretty tough for your morale. You're like, I just want to learn some pentatonic scales, and you're just every time just grinding at me.
It's interesting. Like that's an interesting comparison, because I did used to play music. I actually did play saxophone, but I stopped in high school. But like, I was a woodwind
saxophonist.
Guy.
Mm-hmm.
I was a saxophonist. Thank you.
Great instrument.
I played woodwinds through through the end of high school, and I was like, it is a similar sort of brain-body connection. I remember at one point I took up the bassoon, and bassoon was like the most similar I found to a console controller, because all the action is all thumbs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, most woodwinds, you're mostly using your fingers, but like here it's like, you know, like, yeah, there's like 13 thumb keys. So that's where your dexterity is focused.
Bassoon is the greatest instrument. Shout out to any bassoon players who are listening. I don't play, but I love the bassoon. It's such a good instrument.
In Peter and the Wolf, which one is the bassoon?
It's the main, I think it's the main motif. I might be wrong about that. That might be an English word.
It's the grandpa.
Actually.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
duck is the oboe.
Grandpa, right.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Matt?
Yeah. Say something.
Let's just talk about woodwinds for another hour.
Yeah, I mean, I played the trumpet in high school.
All right, a brass player.
Yeah, and I wish I had stuck with it and got good. I saw somebody playing trumpet recently and was like, God damn it, I could have been doing that. I could have been blowing on that bad boy up there. It sucks.
Mm. Do you want to hear a trumpet player joke?
Please. Yeah.
Yeah.
How many trumpet players does it take to screw in a light bulb?
How many?
Two. One to screw in the light bulb and one to stand next to him and say he could have done it better.
Hey, I love it.
That's pretty good. I like that.
I played piano for 11 years.
Oh, nice.
But I never, ever, ever got good at it. Hmm. And to this day, can barely read music. I mean, I could read it, but like it would be like one chord. And then I stare at the notes for a long time. And then I put my pinky in a place. And then okay, that's this next chord. Like it never clicked for me ever. And I did it every week for 11 years.
Wow. Did you ever just sit at the piano and play for fun, like by ear and just figure stuff out?
How the fuck would I do that? Like it feels like a mouse trap. Mm-hmm. Like when I say that, it's not like my parents were mad at me and like would smash my fingers in the
that's good.
The key cover.
Yeah.
like I was Tom and Jerry, but it never, ever, ever, like no music theory, couldn't play something off of the radio. Like I'm garbage for music.
I think about that sometimes, like how there's the right instrument. I think that there's kind of a right instrument for everybody, and it's not always piano, even though everybody or a lot of people start on piano. And piano is such a sort of master musical instrument because you can see all of harmony in front of you. Like, I wish I were better at piano, but I'm not sure that if I'd learned piano first instead of saxophone, if I would have fallen in love with music and then gone on to, like, study it and do it for a career.
So I'm a violinist then.
It could be. Okay, you're a born violinist. You never know.
Okay, great. No, I'll say that. I'll say that at the airport.
There you go.
I'm a violinist. And they'll be like, you don't have a violin. And I'll be like, oh no, where to go? That was funny to me.
I liked it.
Creating a little bit of like low stakes drama for for yourself at the airport.
Everybody loves a little stress right before they get on a plane.
Yeah, they love that.
Do you, Kirk, do you mess with a rhythm game?
I do. I really liked Rock Band back in the day. That was sort of the music band instrument that I, or sort of music game that I got into. I kind of feel like maybe there will be a resurgence of Rock Band. This is something we were talking about on Triple Click a couple of weeks ago, like whether nostalgia for plastic instrument games might actually lead to them coming back, despite the fact that nobody wants to buy any plastic instruments again. But I did like that game. I liked Rock Band 2, I think. That was actually, I wound up learning drums, actual drums, as a result of playing a lot of drums in Rock Band, just because it's actually fairly close. If you're just doing like the rudimentary thing of figuring out how to move your right foot independently of your hands. And then I, you know, went and had a drum set at the school I was teaching at the time and could practice actual drums. And now I hate playing drums in Rock Band, but it was a great way in to like then kind of flip it around to the real thing.
Yeah.
And then they got too real with it, like Rock Band 3 with the guitar with all the buttons on it. And they went a little too far, but I did like those games.
I have, like, my Rock Band instruments have survived many moves, like, over the years. And I've just, like, I'm taking, they don't, like, some of the hinges on some of the stuff are more loose now, but they still are in working condition. And occasionally I'll get them out just so I can justify, well, this has to move with me again at some point.
Right.
I used it one time 3 years ago. Yeah. I got
you know, I still have one guitar, and that's because of Rock Band VR. Did any of you play Rock Band VR, which was released for the Oculus exclusively? No. I believe.
But Matt and I just got VR headsets like recently. So we're just dipping our toes in this water. But
so this was, I think it can still be played like on PC. So if you have an Oculus, you can like play it. I think it's still Oculus exclusive. And it's one of the wildest VR games. It's a game that I think it was when Oculus was like paying studios to make games for them. So there are these subsidized kind of high budget games that no one played or really talked about. And they paid Harmonix to make this game. And it's like just the guitar, and it's in VR, and it's pretty, you know, nice looking, like polished looking. And you're in this band, you're on stage. And it's not like Rock Band where you have to follow the little gems and be one-to-one accurate.
Yeah.
You just, it's a lot looser than that because you can't, you're kind of in it and it's all around, you know, the music is all around you. And there's like the band, your band members are looking at you and stuff. And there's a set list on the floor and you can go lean up to the microphone. And if you say stuff, you'll hear your voice amplified through the club. And there's people in the audience. And so you start playing like whatever, some sort of pared down playlist of licensed songs. And it's really, really fun just because you're kind of pantomiming playing air guitar with this little plastic guitar. You have to clip one of the Oculus hand controllers onto the head of the guitar, and it uses that to track the guitar in the game. So you're like a disembodied guitar, but it is moving around like the one in your hand. And then you'll get like superstar power or whatever, and it's time to do a solo. And when it's time to play a solo in this version of Rock Band, it's just do whatever you want. Move your fingers as fast as possible on the keys. And if you're playing the Rock Band guitar, you know there's like the higher frets are also available. So you can like go way up to the finger tapping thing.
Right.
And it's just do whatever you want. You just like mash your fingers around and this sweet guitar solo just kind of plays at random. And then you work the whammy bar and it like sprays what I can only describe as neon liquid out of your guitar and all over the audience.
What on earth?
And so you're in the middle of this game, usually, you know, standing alone in your living room or whatever, like making guitar face to no one and no one can hear it, like working the whammy bar while your guitar sprays fluid all over the audience. And that's the experience of playing Rock Band VR.
Wow. That description sounds gave me a panic attack.
So, it made me open a such tab a to search to buy it.
I think there's, well, they took all the images off of Kotaku because Kotaku is slowly being destroyed. But there was a GIF of me playing this game at one point that I put on the internet that it probably exists somewhere, and it's horrible.
The way you describe that, like the possibility of failing out in front of a crowd as opposed to just getting like a you suck,
yeah,
like big game over message, like to see the losing the audience who are staring at you from a stage feels like like the actor's nightmare. It feels like, wait, what am I doing up here? I can't do this.
Yeah.
I don't know these songs. I can't play the guitar.
It's so visceral. That's very true. It starts like a nightmare, though then you just kind of start moving your fingers and the thing comes out and it's in tune. So it's almost like immersion therapy for that fear, because it's not actually, pretty difficult to screw up, which is nice. But that is true.
Weird. I'd be horrified to fail in front of an audience playing Foo Fighters Pretender and then start booing me. It'd be a nightmare, a personal nightmare.
It's true.
Has there been any rhythm game that's ever gotten that sort of freestyle sort of feeling, like solo feeling, right? Like I'm thinking back on like, you know, Parappa the Rapper, it was still, you were just kind of saying word salad when it would get into the cool mode or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Umjam Relami, I guess, was pretty kind of good, but still it was similar to what you're describing with the Guitar Hero VR. You're just kind of noodling around.
Wasn't there a version of like a Dance Dance Revolution style game where you could add freestyle, and as long as you were hitting the actual steps that were being thrown up on the screen, anything additional you did was bonus?
Are you thinking about the Yakuza 0 dancing minigame?
No, that's not what I'm... No, okay. That's not... That's what you're thinking similar. Of, Nick.
That's what I'm thinking of constantly.
I swear there
it's
used to be...
understandable.
Nick! I swear there used to be a game where you could like do a freestyle mode, so it would be the graphics on screen, hit the things when they're flying past you, but additionally, if you can like do the splits or like fucking like use your hands at the same time, that would get bonus scores. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I was wrong.
It's kind of an incompatibility between the like truth of musical expression and the way that video games work. It's always been like you can't actually get at the raw human weirdness of playing music if you're rating it according to some sort of machine, you know, thing. Though, I mean, Rock Band always gets close for me because you're in a room with other people. We had a party once. This is, you know, whatever, in 2009, where we were just playing songs. And it was basically like a karaoke party, only, you know, I was kind of playing drums and I'm hitting the thing so loud and we're all really getting into it. And my buddy is singing. He's like an amazing singer. And it was like a musical performance because we were all sharing it. And so because that energy, you know, he's freestyling on the melody and the drum fills, you can kind of play whatever you want. And there is a little bit of expressiveness there that just comes out because you're in the room with other people. But the minute you're alone with the game, it's really hard to like actually do some kind of meaningful musical expression in that scenario.
It's kind of hard to do anything meaningful in a game ever.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's like a profound and deep problem that games are always trying to solve, and usually in really interesting ways, right?
Though some would argue you're doing something pretty profound in Death Stranding Director's Cut.
That was a good segue.
Nicely done, Weiger. He's on fire today.
Yeah.
Is the, let's get the NBA Jam announcer in here.
he's on fire.
Kirk, I've listened to your personal odyssey with Death Stranding over the course of a few different episodes. You were at some point playing vanilla Death Stranding. Am I correct?
I've played all the Death Strandings. There have been like 16 at this point. I've played them all. I played the first 5 hours of every single version of Death Stranding going back to 2002. I've played all three. I've played the PS4 one and then the PC one and now the Director's Cut, which is the one that I've played the most of. I have not finished, but I'm pretty far. I've probably played like 25 hours or something like that. I'm in the mountains. I met Hartman.
Okay.
That was cool.
Yeah.
I'm just building zip lines everywhere. But yeah, I played all three of these going back to the original version.
On the off chance that somebody is listening to this podcast and hasn't heard us the other two times we've covered Death Stranding, should I do a quick intro?
Sure.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, Death Stranding is a 2019 action delivery strand game developed by Kojima Productions. It was initially released in November of 2019, then on Windows in July 2020, and finally on the PlayStation 5 as the director's cut on September 24th, 2021. Death Stranding is an open world game where you control a man named Sam who is tasked with reconnecting the cities of a post-apocalyptic America, and he does so by delivering goods, packages, and reconnecting them to a chiral network, which is a bit like an energy grid. Along the way, you experience surreal side encounters with a bunch of half-dead human beings and ghosts until finally saving the world from an extinction event, sort of. Right. Does that work?
Yeah, and I don't think we're going to get as spoiler deep in this particular episode if anyone's, you know, hasn't played the game yet, because we already did that on part two of the Death Stranding trilogy, the three episodes we've dedicated to one
three
game on this
of Death
podcast.
Stranding, three podcast yeah, there you episodes go. About it.
Maybe we should bleep that with ghost, like BT sounds, and I'll do a different version of the intro that is less spoiler heavy. How's that sound, Nick?
I think that was spoiler light enough.
Yeah,
I said good. He saves the fucking world. What? I mean,
well, people, it's a fucking video game. people know where this arc is going.
I think it's okay.
Okay, great.
It's interesting. It is the director's cut came out in September, and I will say this. Kirk, did you import your save from your PS4, or did you start fresh in Director's
Cut? I did not. I started fresh. The reviewer guide that Sony sent me advised that I do that, and I decided that I would also because I had open orders that I think I could have abandoned in my PS4 version, but I didn't really remember how. So I was like, it won't let me immediately transfer my save, so I just don't care. Because I wasn't that far on PS4 anyway, so I started over. Right. I was probably glad I did in the end.
Probably the right move, but if you're pretty deep into it, as you know, I had a post game save, and you know, with 80 hours into it, and importing your save from vanilla Death Stranding, Heather and Matt, I'm not sure if you experienced that. I felt like it was kind of a pain in the ass. It's a little cumbersome. Like you have to have. I played Death Stranding the original on PS4, and then now I have the PS5. And I don't have Death Stranding, the original, downloaded on the PS5. You have to re-download that and then, or, you know, play it off of the disc or whatever, and boot that up and then export your save from a terminal in Death Stranding vanilla and then re-import it in Death Stranding Director's Cut. It's just like an extra step that feels like completely unnecessary.
But isn't that totally on brand? Like you have to put your save in a box and then you carry it with the right trigger and you have to carry the whole thing, this whole distance, and then, you know, go into the menu and then load. I mean, it seems kind of appropriate to this game.
And you do get the, like, all of your trophies pop again when you load it up in Director's Cut. So you are kind of getting the same sort of feedback of like, wow, Sam, this stuff's in great shape.
Yeah.
Putting the game in. So yeah, that is how I had to upgrade my save from the previous version of the game, which also I stopped playing before a ton of updates. So when I put in my PS4 disc, there was an enormous update process that happened.
Oh, wow.
Then I, because I got out of the game, I think, even before photo mode was launched. So after that, then I had to, like, I'm in the middle of, I didn't know where the fuck I was. Like, I didn't know where, I didn't even remember what a terminal was. I'm like, is that a post box? Is that, like, where the mules live? Because it was so, nothing in my life has felt more like dropping back into a language class after years away. Because I have no idea about what this vocabulary means anymore. And I kind of was grateful for the experience of getting my save to a terminal because I had to remember how to drive the car. I had to remember how to use the map. Like all of my muscle memories were Assassin's Creed Valhalla memories because there's a similar like scan your surroundings mechanic in that game. And all of the buttons are slightly different. So I was really happy for that. For that transfer of the old into the new. And also, you know, given that so much of the game is based on like delivering physical media to like hermits, that also felt kind of nice. I think Kirk's right. It's thematically on point to force you to deliver your game to yourself.
There's something you were just talking about of, because I was similarly like, as much as I, as many hours as I put into this game, I was similarly being away from it for a year plus, however long it's been since we did the last episode. I was a little disoriented getting back into, you know, how to actually play this thing. And, you know, had a, at a moment where it was like, okay, I'm going to sneak up on this guy, and had forgotten which button I was going to use to strangle him with the chiral knot. So instead I just hit him. And I was like, well, shit, I just completely blew my stealth. Cause so like, and it's just like, it's the kind of thing of like, I wonder if what we were talking about with earlier with, you know, brain body connection and muscle memory, I have to feel like so much of that is like rooted in when you played a game, right? Cause like, there's one thing of like playing a game in your late 30s, early 40s, as I am now, and being like, I'm learning this for the first time. It doesn't like get in my bones as much in the same way as if you if I booted up a Super Nintendo and was playing like Super Mario World. I feel like I just know how to play this game. And I mean, I've done that. Like I'll play that on different platforms and be like, yeah, I know how to play this game. Or is it just because that game's less complex?
I think, you know, I was listening to you all talk about Metal Gear Solid 3 with Gene Park. Yes. That was a really interesting conversation. And thinking back on my time playing that game, which I've actually never gotten that far in, or learning to play Metal Gear 2 when I first played it as well, I didn't come to Kojima games knowing that there was this guy, Hideo Kojima, that was responsible for them. It was very much like my roommate had a PS2 and I played Metal Gear 2. And I've right. always had this thought playing these games that they're so different than whatever other games are being are coming out at the same time. And you get used to whatever the kind of standard control options are of the era, and then one of his games comes out and it just requires you to learn a whole new set of inputs and controls. And you do, if you play the game, like I have playing Death Stranding, I now like am really adept at going through that cargo menu, you know, and I know right. how to select multiple things and then move them onto my little carrier and just kind of do that really quickly. But it requires you to learn all of this stuff. It sticks in your brain, but then there's a lot more to relearn. Because I've totally had the experience of, I think I wrote an article about this for Kotaku, about, I think it was Rise of the Tomb Raider, where I just stopped. I think, I'm guessing you've all had this experience. I just stopped playing the game for whatever reason and played something else for a while. And then I came back to it. And it was in the middle of like the final act. And Lara Croft, right when I picked it up, had to do this sort of one of those cinematic sequences where she has to run and jump through a bunch of stuff that's blowing up. And it was the thing where she runs and jumps. And I was like, okay, like this is a really intense way to come back to this game. And then the final thing required me, I think, to throw my grappling hook, which is in a move that I had just unlocked in the game, but I completely forgot that I had unlocked that move. So I just kept dying. And I died like probably 30 times, not realizing that I could do this, because this one actually really common mechanic had just kind of slipped my mind. Right. That happens a lot. But that game generally has like really easy to remember controls. You could pick that up or be playing Uncharted or be playing whatever else. Like they're all kind of the same, where Death Stranding is like every single thing you do in the game is distinct.
Yeah.
It's dense. Like, yeah, well, I think that the difference is that Mario or Street Fighter, well, Street Fighter to a lesser degree, but like Mario is like move, jump, use item, right? Whereas with Death Stranding, there's a moment in the film Ghost in the Shell where a cyborg, in order to type, their hands extend several times and they get tons of fingers and they can put a finger on every key on their keyboard and then they just type in place. That's what it feels like to hold the controller for Death Stranding. It feels like every aspect, including the like rocking your kid mechanic, which right. the first thing I fucking did when I rebooted this, it was fall off a cliff.
Of course.
And then like, and then BB's just sobbing. And I'm like, I have no idea. No, I know I hold it, shaking the controller, but you have to like look at BB first. And I couldn't. So the half dead kid is just draining life and crying and wouldn't stop. Like I was like, oh, there's got to be a way that it auto stops. No, you have to soothe the baby. So it was really stressful. Same, like, and that's such a basic mechanic. Like you learn how to like soothe BB on like mission 3. but to just suddenly appear in the world of Death Strand. So, and that also tells me a lot about how it would be to actually be in that game, would be that I would die instantly. Like, yeah. I would fall over.
That's probably true of most games, right? Yes. I wonder if, do you all think that the complexity of Kojima's games is related to the fact that they have this extremely long horizon over which people still play them and still talk about them, like that they have this long lasting legacy? Because on the one hand, you have a game like Mario, which is still just as great now as it was when it came out because it's so simple. But sure. Then, you know, you can play like Metal Gear 3 is such a weird game. I never really got the controls, but once you get them, it's its own thing. And it still is pretty playable now, even though it came out so long ago. And I think that'll probably be true of this game as well. Like, is there something to that? The fact that these games are so complicated that actually makes them stand the test of time better?
I have to think so. I mean, it feels like what you get with Kojima with pretty much all the games we've experienced is more is more. He just keeps piling on ideas and systems, and they all just kind of interwork with each other. And, you know, people figure out different ways to exploit these or to have them engage with each other or just to approach encounters in novel ways. Mm-hmm. And also, I think just like the endless amount of Easter eggs which are jammed into these games, I think, is a big part of their long tail as well.
Mm-hmm. I think to what you just said, his games don't use existing control schemes. And right. There is sort of like an accepted vocabulary of input that like Resident Evil then becomes the Silent Hill input, which then mm-hmm. becomes like Dino Crisis are all like tank controls, right? And once we evolve past tank controls and have like a free moving camera in these games, those games become antiquated and sort of locked behind an experience barricade. Whereas Kojima games are so fucking weird that they can't age the same way because they're like emo. It's like it's some kind of weird experimental noise album.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, this is going to sound like a dated pop song in 20 years. Instead, it's like, fuck, what a bunch of weird garbage you have to do in this game. Like, I didn't mm-hmm. remember how to drink from my canteen. And
oh, yeah.
No, that's not, there's no universal video game button for drink from your canteen. It's not like, oh, we're just going to do the same thing you do in Mario Odyssey when he needs to drink from his canteen. Mm-hmm. Right?
I thought I had a gun equipped at one point, but then I started pissing and I was like, oh, whoops. Like I
you had a gun equipped.
I had a gun. Yeah. Yeah.
How did this get played? How did this get played?
Speaking of the canteen, a big change, no more Monster Energy in this game.
Yeah,
Monster Energy, I guess, is a licensing agreement expired or something, but now that's gone.
Also, in the PlayStation 4 version, Monster Energy is gone from
patched out. This is like Peter Dinklage being removed from Destiny, where you really just can no longer even go buy the weird, you know, VHS version of a film that's been totally changed in the DVD version. Like, you can't even get it anymore. Like, that, just because I guess if you had Death Stranding on PS4 on disc and you didn't update it off of the internet. So it is possible to get your Monster Energy drink.
I had it on disc, but yeah, I downloaded all the patches so that I could mm-hmm. upgrade my or ship my save to myself. And there on the table was like these white cans of Bridges Monster Energy or Bridges Energy drink.
Yes.
So is this a good thing or a bad thing? What do you think?
It bummed me out. I like the Monster Energy drink.
Yeah.
I thought that was just like, it's a weird detail and also just another fourth wall-y breaking thing that, you know, it seems to be a constant running thing and a running gag in his games.
Yeah.
I wonder if the ads for that AMC show have also been stripped.
Oh, yeah.
That would sometimes, like, he would...
Yeah, I didn't take a crap in my most recent playthrough, so I didn't see if
the
Norman Reedus ad reappears.
That's right. That seems likely. Yeah. I think about sometimes, you know how there's this trend of young people on Instagram or wherever pretending to be sponsored Because you know, it's cool if you're sponsored. It means you have a certain amount of reach. It's a pretty understandable thing to be like, oh, this is an ad. And then a lot of times the product spokespeople are like, well, I mean, okay, like you can do free ads for us for your 100 followers. I sometimes get the feeling from Kojima that he is behaving sort of similarly in this game. Like the way that the music tracks come up with the name of the artist and the courtesy Tonequake Records, which is actually really cool for the band. It's this Icelandic band. They're called Low Roar. And they were apparently kind of struggling before this game came out. And then the game was this huge boost to their profile. And all these people discover the music, which is, it's really nice music. It's good stuff. But the fact that this music video style, you know, ooh, like this is our licensed music, this band you don't know, but they're cool. Check them out. Like it has the same feeling as the Monster Energy drink and the branded stuff of like, look at my sponsorships. Look at how cool this game kind of is. And I guess I do find that charming, even though I'm not sure if I miss it playing it. You know, I don't know if I miss the Monster Energy drink playing it now.
On that note, we should come clean real quick. Those Helix Sleep ads we've been running on the podcast, that was just me trying to. promo code PLAYED is not going to get you 20% off your Helix mattress. I apologize. Yeah.
There's two things that brings to mind for me. One is that the Pillows were sort of an unknown band in the West. And then FLCL, the anime, came out and suddenly they exploded and were able to do concerts in Los Angeles, which is funny. The other thing it reminds me of is that there was a Frontline documentary that was done in 1999 or 2000 called The Merchants of Cool. And it was about how Gen X teenagers were being profiled by MTV about what is cool and what is not cool. And when they were profiled, they said selling out was the number one most uncool thing you could do. And the documentary then sort of sought out bands and identities that had not been sort of co-opted by a corporate front-facing identity. And the number one band that was still indie all the way to its core was Insane Clown Posse. Like that was like the band that was like, we don't give a shit about corporate stuff. We don't have any brand. There's like a soda that you sprayed at those concerts.
Faygo, yeah.
There it is.
Faygo.
And none of that was like sponsored by anybody. They did an update. Frontline did an update to that documentary series, I think 20 years later.
Oh, wow.
And talked to teenagers about what was cool then. And in a single generation, it had gone from being the worst thing you could do to the coolest thing you could do was getting your fucking brand. Like having...
Wow.
Advertising on Instagram was the only way that you could prove that you existed. Otherwise, like, what the fuck were you even doing if you couldn't land a brand identity for your own personal life? And I think that's a real triumph of capitalism. So
not to shout out another podcast, but the Slate podcast Decoder Ring recently did an episode about selling out that's really, really good, where they talk about, they have like the writer of Reality Bites on, and they talk about the whole concept of selling out in the 90s and musicians selling out versus now. And it's a very interesting thing, and that's super true what you're saying.
Wait, was that an ad that you just did?
It was.
Did you just do an ad for another podcast?
I did. I did. We're going deep on the sponsored content here.
I'm just glad that the Insane Clown Posse has stuck to their guns. I really support them. Whoop whoop to all the jugglers out there.
I do want to talk about the playing this with the DualSense, because I do think this is a game where the DualSense really shines. Like in particular, like the weighted triggers when you are carrying cargo in Sam's hands. Like I think that's really great. Obviously, like, you know, a lot of the there's a ton of gunplay in this game, but like there is a firing range that is new for the director's cut that you can mess around with armaments there. But I think the gunplay feels a little bit better too, just via the DualSense, the haptic feedback.
Yeah, I think that's true. It totally makes sense that this game would use the DualSense so well, right? I think, Heather, did you say that a lot of Kojima's games feel like love letters to Sony Tech? I think you were talking about
the mini,
and your love of the mini disc player, which I was really just really resonating with. And it's true. And they've always kind of got that carbon fiber clicky technology feeling to them, and this game does too. And I mean, the DualSense is just as a little piece of technology that I own is really cool in that way, and totally feels like something that would actually be in this game. So it makes sense that they use it so well. And I love the little pulse on the triggers when you're carrying something real heavy, or like when you're carrying a body a lot of times on those body delivery missions. It just gives you this nice little weird round thing. I'm not even totally sure how that works, but it's lovely.
I feel like very few games use the speaker that is in the controller.
I can't stand that. I always turn it off.
In this one, when BB's crying, it's coming out of your controller, which, you know, feels like Kojima's like, well, there's a speaker in the fucking controller. There's got to be something you can use this for. Oh, I know. You kind of hold it by your belly. So that's where BB would be. So it'll make it feel like you're actually hearing the crying coming from your own stomach.
It's funny.
Every gamer's dream.
It's really what everybody wants. One of my triple click co-hosts, Jason Schreier, couldn't get into this game because he had just had a baby at the time. And he's like, I can't do this. I can't play this game where there's constantly a baby crying. He's like, this is true enough of my actual life. I was playing, if you play with headphones, which this always happens to me when they use the Sony controller speakers, I just can't get into the controller speakers because I play most games with headphones. Yes. But you can't hear the baby crying. And my dog was sitting next to me while I was playing at one point, and she kept reacting to things that were happening in the game, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And then I later realized it's because my controller was like every time I fell down, and I just couldn't hear it because I was wearing headphones.
Kirk, you mentioned earlier you were talking about the zip lines in this game, this is the thing you talked about on Triple Click a bit, but the
I'll talk more about the zip lines. We could talk this. We could spend the rest of this episode talking about the zip lines.
I do find that so satisfying, I spent so much time in my original playthrough, and you know, when anytime I revisit the game, I check in on my zip lines, my high traffic zip lines, to see how many likes they have. But like strategically positioning zip lines and figuring out, especially those mountainous regions that you were talking about, how to get around those quickly, I find just, I don't know, it's just one of those games where it just kind of like clarifies my own tastes and what I find satisfying, which is like traversing terrain and building infrastructure. And that like it just kind of combines both of those things of like, you know, I don't necessarily need to kill a bunch of things, but man, if I can get someplace efficiently, if I can figure out how to engineer that, that gives me just like the perfect sort of dopamine hit I need.
Yeah, this game is an interesting mix of infrastructure and like traversal, which I do think the traversal is an important part of it. I've been thinking about this a lot, like why I find the zip lines so appealing, because I do, the minute I started being able to build them, just the experience of immediately crossing terrain in the air, especially flying over like, you know, an area where the BBs are and hearing Sam kind of be like, yeah, like as he flies to the air. It's just a great thing. By the way, did any of you notice, I noticed this when I was playing, you know, there's that period where BB, you don't have BB because like creepy dead man is off doing whatever with him and you're alone. And when you're alone and Sam rides the zipline, he's just quiet because he's such a sad man. And then when you get BB back, he like starts cheering again, which I thought was kind of nice.
Well, I never noticed that detail.
Yeah, I could be wrong, but he never did it the whole time. I was like, oh, he stopped cheering with joy. But then it was just because his joy was gone because he didn't have Lou. So, so infrastructure. A lot of games are infrastructure, right? Like if you play like a theme park designer game or Jurassic Park game or SimCity or whatever, like that's all infrastructure, or Civ. It's just that's the whole game. And that's fun. But I really compare this game to Subnautica, which I really discovered earlier this year. I got really into Subnautica and Below Zero. Have any of you played Subnautica? This game is amazing.
I haven't played it. I've heard people rave about it. I bet I'd love it. I am a little scared of the ocean.
Me too. A real almost phobia of specifically like things looming out of the deep dark. Speaking of like Rock Band VR being immersion therapy, this game was kind of immersion therapy because it's not actually like, once you play it enough, you're like, okay, this is kind of a small team. There's not going to be some crazy monster that's going to hunt me down. This isn't Alien Isolation, but it is creepy. There's a lot of that. But once you get into it, it's a game about building infrastructure and about conquering a really hostile environment where initially you don't even have oxygen tanks. You can't breathe underwater. So you can only be down there really briefly. By the end of the game, you know, you have all these amazing vehicles you've built and all these bases, and you've built this whole thing up and you can kind of get around and you've really mastered it. And I find that so engrossing and satisfying. And that game is just that. That game is like the part of Death Stranding that I really like without all the gonzo story stuff and the endless weird cutscenes and the sort of, and all of that stuff, which is, you know, kind of appealing in its own way, but a really different kind of an experience. So I think that it has to have both. Like, you have to get over the mountains to then have it be, yes. or I have to get over the mountains to have it be satisfying to build the zip lines. And I have a feeling that if I keep playing this game, or if it comes out on the PS6 in 3 years, I'll actually not build the zip lines, because I'll be like, no, man, what the real game is on foot. Like, you can't just build the zip lines and bypass everything. You got to walk.
What did you feel about the new? So there's the cargo catapult, which fire. I used that for the first time and just blasted. I mean, my cargo is so much harder to get to because I didn't understand. Right. I was like, oh, it'll head to this sort of like arrow, that general area. But a parachute, you have to control a parachute that opens on your cargo and then it falls just on a mountain somewhere. And I was like, this sucks.
Yeah.
This is so much worse than just taking it.
You're sort of like, I would have been there already. Like, I would have like, I had to do all this. More menus.
And then there's also like a launch pad, which is a bit of a ramp that you can either drive or run off of, and it'll send you into a slow motion trick mode. I felt Apodaca, I felt like that would be your jam.
That why don't we wait for later on in the show when we talk about the things that we liked?
Okay, great.
I didn't know you could run off of it. I only knew you could shoot a vehicle off.
Same,
of
I
it.
Just now learned that.
Yeah, wow. You can run, and then you can do tricks with Sam without a car.
Yeah, it fucking, I'll say it now, it rocks. It's the best. Like doing flips and little, like, you know, on your little, like, I like to use the tricycle as my, like, main mode of traversal for the most part. And if you get on that bad boy and you get on one of those ramps, it's a different game, baby. You're like, you're playing like Dave Mira BMX or something. Yeah.
So wait, can you get on the little, you know, those floating cargo holders? Can you ride one of like a shopping cart, basically? I'm sure that you can.
You should be able to. There's got to be. He's because you can ride that a little bit, like down the mountain and stuff too. So like, I'm going to build a ramp down at the base of a mountain, ride the thing down a mountain, and then just see what happens. Wow.
I feel like something good will probably happen.
I'll love it.
That makes me want to do that as well.
You'll immediately go to your own beach. Like
you
just
you had too much fun out here. Don't you see this world? What are you doing?
this was a thing that I wasn't sure if this was post-game content that I never got to, or if this was a new ad for the director's cut. But all the companion cube Easter eggs, was that director's cut content? Did you guys get to that?
Yeah, the Valve stuff. I just kind of keep seeing that, but I'm not totally clear what the deal is.
I think that was patched in after the PC release. So
when it was on Steam. It was like a release later on Steam, and they probably made a big deal out of it being on Steam. Of course, that's totally what it must have been.
So they put that stuff in. Yeah.
There's also Cyberpunk content. That has aged like a fine wine.
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty funny.
Although the truth is, I gave Cyberpunk a 10. Like, I was like, hey, it's V. Yeah. There's a reference to V. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
We all like Cyberpunk. It's a mess, but I had fun with it.
I still haven't played it. I'm waiting for them to do the... whatever the definitive edition. I played a little bit of
it. Gonna happen. Yeah. No.
It'll happen in like two or three years, and then I'll maybe play it.
Publishers have done a good job with definitive editions recently. So we look forward to that.
That and Metroid Prime 4 is just around the corner where, you know.
It's totally gonna happen.
So the companion cube stuff is, which was new to me, is the missions are like things like, hey, can you like I have this incredibly valuable cargo that I need. And, you know, you'll get it from the, from Jake Wind or whoever. He's like it's super valuable. Please get it for me. And then you'll go retrieve it and bring it back to the wind farm. And it's but the object is like literally a companion cube. It's like this guy wants his companion cube. And there's a series of these missions. So there's that. But then, like, I was like, oh, okay, this is a nice little Easter egg. But then you also get emails about this updating it. And it's things like, and the emails then add a layer of, Sam, thanks for bringing that back for me. I know you're a huge fan of Portal and Half-Life. So just acknowledging these games exist.
It's that like branding thing again. Like where he always wants to embrace that sort of inserting brands because it adds some sort of legitimacy or something. That's pretty funny. Right. Do you all read the emails? I never read my emails. It's like I try to actually be good about emails in real life, but I can't do it in this game.
It's my favorite part of the game.
Really? Like, oh, I should read them more.
I think one of the things that we were frustrated by in Police Knots was how dense the information is and how you know, you're like, you look at a fucking shrub on the street and your partner is like, well, that shrub is bioengineered to run on blood. And you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? All of that information is, I feel, relegated to the email system and the info dumps are all in your terminal in Death Stranding. Mm. So all of his like bizarre ideas that he had that he didn't have anywhere to implement, all of that stuff is just readable. And I feel like that's the best way to get at Kojima's like crazy, you know, sideways thinking ideas that he has no, like there's nowhere to put those things. And another thing that was interesting is that his description of asexuality in Death Stranding Vanilla was considered a little bit problematic by a lot of the community. And that email has an update inside the game where it's like this email may, like the original email is there. And then at the bottom, it says something like the information in this email is considered offensive and is no longer to be used by the Bridges. Yeah, it's both owns up to the fact that it was there and then also amends it to some degree. And I thought that was kind of nice.
Yeah, that is. That's cool.
Wow. I'm trying to think what else is it? What other new content is in there? I mean, the support skeleton just seemed like all around better than all the other skeletons you had. The Mazer gun I thought was fun. It was fun to mess around with. Shock some people.
I don't think
I've used that. Are any of the weapons in this game actually good, though? Like, just...
I mean...
I guess the Bola gun is kind of fun.
Yeah, Bola gun's fun. I think this is similarly fun to the Bola gun in that it's just sort of like this limited range, non-lethal armament, you know, that disables enemies in kind of a fun way. I thought it was okay.
I like the strand. I like to strand people. Like, I like to, I mean, but also I like to sneak. And I know Heather doesn't like to sneak.
No.
So you give me an opportunity to strand somebody, you're getting hogtied up.
The way I played this game, which I used a lot of the shooting range because I was like, here we go. It's just fucking combat. Let's go. Let's go. Mm-hmm. Let's go. Mm-hmm. The way I played this game initially, I believe I said this on the podcast, was to drive into people as fast as I could.
Mm-hmm. That's a good strategy.
Which worked for so long until I killed somebody doing it. And I was like, wait, you can kill somebody with your bike?
Yeah.
That's bullshit. Because like most of the time you get that really satisfying slowdown of the sound and the visuals as you knock somebody out or shoot them in the head.
Yeah.
And that would happen every time you would hit somebody. So if you could manage to line up the mules, like if you could get them to all chase you, then you could like combo through multiple mules. And it was just the best. Until I started having to deliver the bodies to the incinerators, and I was like, "That's a bummer."
Yeah,
yeah. I was going to say that on the cell, because I like hog tying the mules too. I think that's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And on a farm or in this game, I'm enjoy both versions. The firing range has like some drills that you can do, and some of them are just stealthy. And I was like, I was having fun doing those. You know, like I'll do a little stealth mini game mission and you don't really get a lot from them, I guess, is the thing. It would be nice if you got more likes from them. Maybe as you progress, you eventually get more to improve your ranking. But like I did find them just kind of fun to blaze through.
I think it's nice to be able to test things out without being in the field, or at least I've always felt a lot of stress, especially in the early parts of the game, you know, where you're carrying a bunch of cargo and you really need to get somewhere and you haven't been able to save for a little while and you're in BT territory and there's this kind of feeling of, okay, so I'm going to throw this grenade and then what's going to happen? You know, there's a kind of unknowability to the BTs in a lot of ways, at least early on, until you really figure out that actually they're really easy to deal with and there's almost nothing to it. But when you don't know that, it's sort of stressful, and it is nice having a firing range to just be like, I can just go test out this new thing they just gave me. I can really see how it works and like what all the systems underlining it are or underpinning it are. And I don't have to find that out in the field when I like am in the, you know, I need something I don't have and it winds up being really stressful or wasting a bunch of time.
I liked being able to fire the actual guns because like I use the blood bullets
sure.
on all of the enemies in the actual game and never, ever used the assault rifle or like I don't think I murdered anybody except with the motorcycle in the entire time I was playing the game.
Yeah.
And it was nice on the drills to be like, oh, I've never used this gun. Like also, right. was there the guided missile gun in the first game?
I definitely because, don't have that yet, but I that sounds awesome.
I think you get that. It's been a while, but I think you get that in the late game. I think you get that to take down some of the late game bosses. Mm. You definitely get that quad rocket launcher.
Okay, well maybe that was it because I didn't remember targeting multiple sections of like or targeting multiple enemies with the missile launcher, a la Panzer Dragoon, and then unleashing like. A missile that would shoot up into the sky and then split into multiple missiles was great. That was awesome.
There's so many ways to do everything in this game and so many right. solutions to any given problem mm-hmm. that I always find myself over preparing and then realizing I didn't need to because, you know, even a traversal problem, you can use a rope or you can go around or you can kind of just jump half the time and yeah. you'll be fine. And it's kind of, I think it's appealing in a way, but it also does leave a lot of things on the table. Like I find myself just, yeah, not using a lot actually of the stuff that I could be equipping and using.
Why'd I bring three ladders?
I have so many climbing ropes that I bring with me and they're always yeah. just getting destroyed by the timefall. Can we talk about right. timefall? Okay. There's a theory here that I talked through with a buddy of mine named Matthew Burns. He's a game designer and director, writer, a very smart guy, and I have to credit him because this was his thought. But basically that things like timefall in this game, there are all of these weird narrative things in this game, right? Timefall, the mules, mm-hmm. the entire narrative justification for them, the fact that they're like people who used to do deliveries and then were replaced and they went crazy and so now they steal stuff. It's basically... there's a way to think of almost every narrative thing like that in this game as just a game mechanic that they wanted to put in the game that they then reverse engineered into something that exists in the narrative. Like, oh, well, we need there to be enemies who try to steal your stuff, so let's just come up with a reason why. Or, oh, we need your right. stuff to deteriorate when, you know, in a certain circumstance, so let's just make up the rain. Because the timefall is, it's one of the most amazing ideas when you first hear it and you see what happens, you know, when the rain falls, or even just the visual of the grass growing and then, you know, fully maturing and then dying and going in these cycles on the ground. But then it doesn't make any sense when you think about it for more than 1 second. And Sam's always just kind of wearing a hood and not really getting in on him. And like, is the river or the lakes all made of timefall water? I'm assuming these are all things that you already talked about on your show, but this is the first time I've really gotten to talk about this. So anyways, yeah. I don't know. Does that make sense that a lot of this stuff feels half-baked because it may well have just been created to justify something in the actual game that you play?
No, I love that theory. And I think it's eminently plausible. I mean, like I love timefall as a concept.
It's
I
so
think
cool.
it's just so cool. And
it could
and
you could make a whole game that's just about timefall or like a whole narrative world yeah. that's just that one thing is the only thing that's different from the world. And it would be like it would just open the door to a million cool possibilities.
Yeah, it could be a puzzle platformer where rain makes things, you know, age and decay. And that
right,
could
like
be the
entire
thing.
Maybe is a braid level now that I think about it.
If the mules were reverse engineered from, we need somebody to try and take your cargo. I think that the writer or writers who came up with the explanation for the addictive properties of satisfying somebody else, thematically, it ties so well into the rest of the game for me because your currency is likes. And so if you are, and there's emails about the dopamine hits that you receive when you get likes online, and that being linked structurally and narratively to these people who are addicted to dopamine hits and can't get it. And then you as a player also experiencing the same dopamine hits when you are delivering stuff and becoming like, yes, oh, I want to get better at this. I want to get more likes. I want to get that crunch at the end where you run through a million likes really quickly on your menu. I felt like it was a really satisfying integration between narrative and gameplay. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just saying that whoever, if the system came first, somebody walked in after a brainstorm and was like, guys, I fucking got it. I know exactly what this is. And everybody probably like high-fived one another and then went out for beers.
No, yeah, I love that. That I feel like that is like a perfect example of the other reason that Kojima games live as long as they do. And people talk about them as long as they do. There's such a half-life on the narrative stuff in these games just because that is a great interpretation. And it's the kind of interpretation that you would arrive at if you read all the emails, play the whole game, have really played it enough to have had the feeling yourself, you know, of how kind of addictive it is to be making the deliveries and can kind of get that perspective on it, which is hard to get at first. I remember when this game came out, there was just, it just seemed so outlandish, the initial explanation of the mules. It was like the funniest thing I'd ever heard. I was like joking about it with people being like, can you believe this shit? Look at this guy. And now, you know, when you put it that way, it's actually like, well, or it's this kind of goofy on its face, but actually very profound statement that gels perfectly with the game, which it is. And it does.
I think if I can make a forecast to the future of the Death Stranding series, because there's rumor that he's making another one. It would be fucking awesome if after you beat the game, if you chose to continue to play, you became a mule in somebody else's occurrence.
Oh, shit.
Like, I don't want to stop doing Stranding stuff, but you no longer have access to packages, so you can go to the dark side and just fucking go after Sam's, would be kind of hypnotic and internally consistent with what's going on.
Yeah, and, like a Dark Souls thing.
God, I would love it so much to be able to hunt a Sam. That would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
I do, like, I've been off social media for a few months now, but
good when for you. You're living your best life. I'm right there.
Thank you. And you gave a thumbs up as you said that.
Oh, I did. That's true. I wasn't being Hartman. That was just me giving you a thumbs up. This is from before social media. This is just like one guy giving a thumbs up to a camera.
I loved it, but I will say, playing the, you know, getting back into this game and getting back on the saddle, man, it is so satisfying to get likes. And that is just such a feeling of like, fuck, my brain is just so like corrupted by just like that feeling of like someone likes something. And that is, there's a numerical, accounting of how many times someone has liked something that you have done.
So how do you get likes on your stuff? Because I keep building these zip lines in really choice locations and they never really get likes.
Yeah, I wonder if it has to do with when the player base just might be much smaller now, you know?
I guess it's only been a couple months. I mean, I suppose not as many people are playing the PS5 version.
But I also have no idea, because I've had stuff that I thought was like, oh, this is like the perfect place for, you know, like a rope or whatever, and just it's never gotten a like beyond me. But then I've had some other like, you know, bridges or whatever they've built that have like gotten done pretty well.
I guess this is kind of the social media experience, right? Of the algorithm doesn't like your joke, even though you think it was great and it gets two likes. It's kind of the same.
This Timefall shelter is perfectly positioned. Right. People don't understand.
How do I get that notification that sounds like a squishy like electronic note? Like, how do I hear? Because that sound is so unique, and it's designed for you to enjoy it. Not unlike, you know, a red like number hovering above an app that you have or something. It's like that same kind of satisfaction. Like, oh, I like that. And squishy is the only way that I've been thinking about how to describe that sound for a few minutes, and I think
the UX design in this game is out of control. Like the sound and the menus. I mean, given how weird and naughty the menus are, even the fact that you have to hold X to advance out of a menu, which I think is just bad on its face. Like, I just don't think it's supposed to work. That like menus are just supposed to have consistent forward and backward buttons. But even that, like, I even find that just to be appealing in some way. I think just because I've done it so many times and I've gotten the timing down. You know, when you're making a delivery and it's like, you can't press X right away when you're delivering everything or it doesn't go through. You have to wait. But if you just tap it, it's like, gives you some error message or something.
Yeah, it's like,
I don't know,
what are you
all
doing?
Of those weird little rhythms. And then combined with the sound effects of just the the interface are all really, yes. really appealing.
I find it really appealing when one of your structures falls apart. Mm. Like when you get the notification that something is the bridge in the vicinity of the cosplayer is near ruined. I'm like, good.
You fuck Conan fuck and his nobody, bridge.
If you guys don't want it, it can just go away. Like if I feel there's a pettiness to letting my own structures fall apart where I'm like, oh, well, too bad. I built something nice and you don't want it. So fuck you.
Yeah, nobody tried to help keep this up. Yeah.
I had a similar feeling with I had a zip line that I built. I think I talked about this on our previous, our Death Stranding 2, but episode. I had a zip line that I built that got more likes than pretty much anything I'd ever built in the game. It was 2000 or something. It was a good number of likes, but then no one had ever upgraded it past level one. And I was like, everyone's making use of this thing. This is a high traffic zip line. Like, clearly you're all getting a benefit out of it, but no one wants to donate some ceramics to upgrade this thing so we can have some music play when you approach it. What are you doing, freeloaders?
The downside of the connection metaphor is that you also feel very frustrated with people that you're connected with.
Yeah, you're standing on the top of a mountain like Rorschach looking down on all of them and being like, fuck you. I don't
So I've been struck by how there are no believable human relationships in this entire game. Is that fair to say? I haven't finished it yet, but I've just... there isn't a single one. There are actually very few to begin with of even just people who actually interact with another person. And the ones that I've come across that exist are just absolutely banana nut bars. Like, they just don't make sense. There's the storyline where you go and get a wife for this guy and bring this woman to him so they can get married. And
yeah. She's in just a body bag.
In a body bag because she's scared or whatever. And she is a completely bizarre character. Then later he emails you being like, well, marriage, it's not all it's cracked up to be, man. This sucks. And that's one relationship that you see. And it's just so bizarrely written. Sam's relationships with everybody are very strange. It's such a deeply lonely game.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really remarkable thing about it. I mean, you can read a lot into it about Kojima and where he was at probably when he was coming up with this concept and him leaving Konami and all of that. But just the experience of playing it outside of him and outside of whoever wrote it, it's such a strange and depersonalized and kind of empty game in at least one way, even though I think there's a lot of humanity and a lot of feeling in it at the same time.
I think that, and Matt and I were talking about this, where I was like, there's so much pressure. There has to be so much pressure on Kojima to fucking forecast something that's going to happen in the future because he bullseyed it.
Bullseye. Yes. I think that's the plural of bullseye.
Eyes-ed it. So gratifyingly in Metal Gear Solid 2, when he was describing the information warfare technology of the future of the United States, and everybody still cites it, that to be able to do that more than once in your career is so unlikely. And yet he brought out a game about people being reliant on deliveries in a world where nobody could actually talk to each other, where dialogue includes how frustrating it is to wear a mask all the time. Before the fucking pandemic happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then also presaged the way that isolation would make people weird to one another. what a fucking home run. And I don't know because we read the and we'll talk about it next week, I think. We read this book, The Creative Gene, and Kojima's book. And I'm still looking for what his process is, because did he go into this thinking, what is the future of America going to be like? Is it going to be politically divided, isolated, and reliant on Amazon technology? Or was he just like, oh man, I got a cool idea for a fucking weirdo game? there's no way of knowing which one happened. But when my friends and I, who have gone from seeing each other once a week my friends, my two or three friends that I have in the world for real. Yeah. I went from seeing those people multiple times a month to multiple times every 6 months to now, like, just is in free, like, less than I see my any and like my ref, I can't even like I don't there yeah. are friends that I was so close with that I haven't seen now in 2 years, and that is when I see them, it's so strange to talk to them. You feel so mm-hmm. disconnected and divorced from this relationship that you've carried with you your whole adult life. So yeah, what I'm saying is I completely agree with what you're saying, but I think it's a feature, not a bug. Like, I think he nailed it.
Well, right. He whether he was just making a game about being really lonely, and then we entered this extremely lonely time, and then a lot of his observations about being lonely as a guy I would have to assume on some level is a fairly lonely person or has a lot of experience with loneliness. Like, the truth of it still rings out. I made the joke about thinking Die Hardman looked stupid when I first played the game, and then a year later playing it during COVID and being like, I would wear a mask like that. That's pretty nice. Though his mask, I guess, is it just opens to his mouth, so it wouldn't really protect you from COVID. But I'm sure they make on Etsy or something versions of that. There's also something really, I think, beautiful, and like it's a kind of a fantasy in this game that you're an Amazon delivery guy. And you're the greatest hero, when the truth of the matter yes. is that, like, you know, everything in our society, like, dehumanizes and devalues the people who do all of these essential tasks. Like, that was such a sad thing that was revealed by the pandemic, right, is that essential workers are actually people who were treated as largely expendable. We're in this world, in this game, it's like, you're the guy bringing me my medication or like bringing me my comic books or whatever dumb crap right. I need. Like, you're a hero. Like, I love you for that. And that is actually really, really amazing and remarkable that it was in a game, you know, from before COVID.
And you don't have to urinate into a Gatorade jug in your truck. You can urinate anywhere.
That's true. That's true.
Well, we should get to our final thoughts on Death Stranding Director's Cut. It's time for our review crew.
Review crew.
So we'll say one positive thing about this game. And I was thinking, since we've done this, I mean, we know what our scores are going to be, Matt and Heather. Mm-hmm. We talked about this game twice. So I was thinking, instead of a score, why don't we give this a Death Stranding style ranking, like a delivery
ranking?
Oh,
yeah. Okay.
Okay, great.
Okay, great. All right. And I will say my positive thing, man, we touched on the Mazer gun, but the Mazer gun is pretty satisfying to use. It is fun to shock the shit out of guys. And, you know, it integrates well. It's like with the new mission, the new quest line in this game through the ruined factory, which is, you know, a little bit more, it's a little bit different, honestly, than the rest of how the game plays. It's a little bit more limited and contained, but it is, it's a cool gun and it's a cool new feature. And hey, you know what? Playing this game again for the first time in however long it's been. When did we do that last episode? So in March of 2020, when was that?
No, Death Stranding Part 2 was last Cogember, you fool.
Oh, how did I forget? Since in the year it's been yeah. since last Cogember.
Yeah. It only comes but once a year.
Feels like it's earlier and earlier. Since we played rebooting it a year ago, I was like, oh man, this is so satisfying. And I think I might platinum this game. I don't wow. do that often. But I was like, I just like moving around in it, and it's still very satisfying. I'll give this an S, awesome. Heather, what do you think?
Well, before you platinum this game, set your difficulty to hard, because the platinuming is reliant on the difficulty that you're playing.
Mm-hmm. And I did see
the,
that, yeah.
The barrier for me to platinuming Death Stranding was that I had already done so much of the stuff that was required of me in the wrong difficulty setting. Mm-hmm. So I kind of gave up on platinuming it, because I was like, fucking, Also, who knows which of the guns I haven't made to get that trophy.
Right, sure.
Going on just the director's cut, I really liked the new quest. Mm-hmm. It was really nice to, and it also, I don't feel like that idea was touched on in the rest of, and I don't want to spoil it for people who are going to pick up Death Stranding Director's Cut just for that quest and ramps. or the racetrack, which we haven't talked about.
Oh, yeah.
I really liked the quest, and I really liked what it talked about in like one of the things that you think about when you're playing the game is the sort of horror of what is actually being told to you and how everybody is desensitized to that horror. And this was a backstory about people who were not. And I think that was a compelling area to expand on. I don't know. I think Kojima tweeted that nothing was cut when he released Death Stranding. So this must have been an afterthought or an additional idea, but I really liked it. I'm also going to give it an S. Awesome. Like.
Oh, we didn't talk about how Kojima doesn't like that it's called Director's Cut. That he tweeted out.
Because it implies that the first version was incomplete, right? Which he doesn't think. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have the tweet here. In the game, it is not what was cut, but what was additionally produced that was included. Director's Plus. So in my opinion, I don't like to call it Director's Cut.
Just perfect that he would come up with a different name for it.
Yes.
For something that we like conceptually understand anyway. We're like, yep. we get this. Yeah. I'll say that for me, yeah. I mean, one of the benefits of like being done with the game, importing your save, and then upgrading to the director's cut, all the added stuff, instead of it being sprinkled in to the story, like where it would fit in the story, it's all kind of just there and you can kind of just go do it whenever you want. So the new quest that Heather was talking about, the new story quest, you're able to finish that like really fast. So I like went through that stuff, like got through that like really interesting like part of the story. And Heather, I know you didn't touch on this probably because I don't know what you thought about it, but you got to do a little sneaking, and
it's true.
There's like, you know, there's, you're in this warehouse and there's mules and you got to take them out, and you don't have to sneak. You can just kind of gun
definitely
down.
Definitely did not no. sneak.
But when I'm told, hey, use discretion when you get in this warehouse, I'm like, got it, no problem. I'm sneaking. And then once the mules see me, I panic and just start just mowing them down. Doing tricks on the ramps is like something that the game absolutely didn't need to be good. but it's I'm glad it's there. And then the buddy bot. We didn't talk about the buddy bot.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
this new
oh,
robot
yeah.
that you do a quest for, and he like helps you out and stuff, and he's pretty funny. Pretty fun. And you know, what else is there to say about it? It's Death Stranding. The people that like it, like love it. They think it's fantastic. And the people, that hate it just, never gave it a chance, I think, or are not, haven't opened their heart to the idea of liking it. And that's, you know, that's on you, friend. This is an S. Awesome.
Wow.
Nice.
All right, Kirk, your positive thing and a ranking if you like.
All right. Well, I don't have to just go with Director's Cut because I'm playing this game, or I'm definitely in uncharted territory now. So I'm just going to say something that I like about it. And that's that it's really a power fantasy for backpackers, this game. Because I do a lot of backpacking. I live in Oregon, and we go up to, you know, to Mount Hood and go backpacking every summer when it's not on fire. And it's a whole thing. I mean, if anyone who's ever gone backpacking, you go out, you put a lot of weight in your backpack. You've got like whatever, 60 pounds in your backpack or something, and you're carrying it, and it is like really heavy, and your whole life narrows down to the path in front of you. And every little thing, you know, becomes this major obstacle. Okay, there's a tree across the trail, and you're going to spend a while kind of getting over it because it's so easy to lose control. And at first, the game felt to me like a really accurate simulation of that. And I thought that was pretty cool. Oh, I'm like, I have to go down this hill, so I've got to go really careful because I have all this weight on my back, and it really felt accurate. But the more I play, and now I have robot legs, and there's like ramps I can apparently do jumping stunts off of, and it's like, it's become the opposite. It's just like a power fantasy for like, what if I could carry so much weight that my backpack was like 15 feet up above my head and I was just running down snowy mountains without missing a beat? And I love that about it. It feels just so funny and empowering in a way that I really enjoy, while also, of course, liking so many other things about the game. So yeah, it's an S awesome for me, for sure. It's a great game.
Wow.
Like.
Those were our thoughts, but maybe we're wrong.
Maybe we were wrong. We've got reviews that we've called from all over the internet, and if we had a positive take on this game, these will be negative reviews, and if we had a negative take, these will be positive reviews. It's the segment that changes every week. Maybe we were wrong. And you know what? I've read some reviews about Death Stranding prior to this in multiple other segments of Maybe We Were Wrong. So this time I just pulled some tweets from Twitter, and I'm just going to run through those in rapid succession as evidence that maybe I didn't understand what I was talking about when I gave this game an S awesome like. Cowbox writes, when Death Stranding is good, colon, you are walking from point A to point B and a song starts playing. When Death Stranding is not good, colon, pretty much any other time. up next, I've got The Bacon Life. One, Death Stranding is not good. I can understand why Konami wanted to control what he did. When he gets freedom, he makes crap.
Wow.
Man, okay? Harsh.
Up next, I have... El Tortuga Games writes, why do you care if I think the gameplay of Death Stranding is not good? I am far from being the only person who feels that way. The game aggressively goes out of its way to waste your time. It is 100% fair for me to express my opinion on a discussion about Game of the Year. And then finally from Chase Face
Show.
Was
that person just tweeting to the world? Like, how dare you say and silence me and my opinions?
I have two more. One is from Chase Face Show. Hello, new followers. I mostly just post about games I dislike and argue openly with anyone who thinks differently than I do. Death Stranding sucks cocks, for example.
Jesus.
And then finally, this is my favorite. From Stupid Mario Brothers at Squoops. Death Stranding sucks. I hate you, Die Hardman.
Oh, wow.
He does talk a lot, in fairness. He does talk a lot, that Die Hardman.
They should make Kojima read those on Kimmel. I have one from Metacritic. This is about the director's cut. And this is the review. This is a zero from EDE11.
Zero. Wow. Nothing.
No Monster Energy in the director's version? Kojima betrayed us all. Sam can only drink Monster Energy. That's the basis of the game. Probably a troll, but I liked it.
It's good.
There are. I have one here from Metacritic as well. And it's also a zero. And it just says, new version is still a boring walking simulator with near zero interesting gameplay. Avoid. And I just don't understand. Like, it's not the term walking simulator for this game sort of bumps up against me. Because, yeah, your mode of traversal is walking most of the time. But to me, a walking simulator would be like, okay, use one trigger to move your leg forward, the other one. It's not like you're simulating walking. There's more to do.
It's a derisive term for use for like first person adventures without combat. And they're kind of just sort of saying or for any sort of story based, no real gameplay, no real conflict sort of experiences. And they're just sort of saying the same for this.
There are giant monsters in it. There's monsters.
I feel like a lot of, I don't know this person, but I think a lot of critiques of the game that are like that are from people who haven't played it. Because if you're calling it a walking simulator in the like rhetorical sense, like you're talking about whatever, Gone Home or a game like that, this is nothing like that. Like, and it is actually a walking simulator in the true sense of those words. It is a very deep and complex simulator for like very complicated walking. But if you're using it in that way, why would you be saying that there's nothing interesting in the game? Because there is, from like the first minute that you play it. So yeah, it's hard to take that kind of review seriously, personally speaking.
Some of it is maybe incomprehensible, but it's not uninteresting.
Like, no. Like,
sure. I really think it's just as simple as these are a lot of people played the, you know, like the Metal Gear Solid franchise and were expecting the same thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's not that, it's not as combat heavy. There is stealth, but it's not as robust. And there's not, you know, there's not this huge body count. So I think, and I think some people played the franchise just for that.
That's true. And it's, I mean, yeah. It's certainly fair for someone not to like this game too. Like, I don't mean to suggest that disliking, like, I could completely see this not being someone's cup of tea.
I'll suggest that you're wrong for disliking it. I'll take that. I'll take that.
Hey, it's time for the question block.
Ba-ding!
All right, this is from Ian Riley from our email, and the subject line is Death Stranding question. What would be your low roar and Conan? So that's basically the basis of the question, but they write, if you were the director of Death Stranding, what media would you include that you wanted to strand with the player? Who would you want to act in the game? Would you still use music for the cinematic moments, or would you replace it with some other type of media? Thanks for the question, Ian.
Wow. Mm. Interesting question.
Excellent question.
So I guess it's kind of like someone you're a fan of, mm-hmm. right? Like that is kind of in both cases. It's like, you know, hey, I like Guillermo del Toro. I collaborate with him and I'll just put him in the game. Boy, that's a good question. I'd like to model a character off of John Carpenter.
Wow.
But then have someone else voice him. because it seems to be the convention of this game.
That's the way to do it. Yeah.
But then, and then as for music, boy, what should be playing? I don't know. You know what I'd like to hear is just a little bit of. We were talking saxophone earlier. How about some Sonny Rollins? How about some John Coltrane?
Wow.
How about some just smooth tenor sax sort of playing?
I feel
like that would be fun.
Some Miles Davis would be really nice, like psychedelic.
Oh, there you go.
Late 60s yeah. Miles on some of those long walks would be a. Would be just the thing.
I feel like one of my favorite bands, Kings of Convenience, have a very low roar sound aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of very stripped down acoustic guitars and harmonies. And I think that they would be an excellent complement to a long delivery. I think that my personal director shout out body scan would be Hideaki Anno, the director of Evangelion and Shin Godzilla, as well as Kari Kano, having him in the game and then voiced by David Hayter. Why not?
Yeah.
So those would be my additions to the game, but Sam would drink, Sam's beverage instead of Monster Energy drink would just be milkshakes. Because I would love to hear Norman Reedus be like, "Oh, I love milkshake."
Yeah, I guess I mean I would absolutely make this game worse. It wouldn't be better if I was doing it, because like the music would be like Weezer, and like the people in it would be like Johnny Knoxville, like
fucking awesome.
Like Johnny Knoxville would be in it. John Wick would be in it, not Keanu Reeves. John Wick, and his name would be John Wick. And like it would just be the worst. Who would be it? Mark Maron would probably be like be like all sorts of people. Kermit.
You're delivering to Maron's garage.
Yeah.
Kirk, you mentioned Miles Davis. Any other elements you'd wanna throw in this?
I always think of the band Darling Side. Have you ever heard Darling Side? They're a current sort of acoustic group. Really beautiful stuff. And they sound, low roar sounds a little bit like them. So them, or maybe the Waylon Jennies, one of those great vocal harmony groups, I think would sound really good on those long walks.
I love it. Hey, hit us up with your thoughts and your questions on Twitter and Instagram at GetPlayedPod, or send us an email at GetPlayedPod@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 6162PLAYED. 616-275-2933. Our music and engineering are by Devin Bryant. You can follow him on Twitter at BaffleGabs, and our guest, the great Kirk Hamilton. Kirk, thank you so much for being here. What a wonderful discussion.
Thanks, Kirk. Hey, of
thank
course.
You, Kirk.
Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Check out Triple Click. It's a lot like How Did This Get Played, except the three hosts are smart and have good insights.
It's different in that it's a good show, but
yeah, it's good. check out Triple Click and tell us about the pod and your other podcast and anything else.
Yeah, those are my main two projects. Triple Click, which is great fun. I make that with Maddie Myers from Polygon and Jason Schreier from Bloomberg News. And we all used to work together at Kotaku back 3 years ago now, I guess, when I was in games media. So that's kind of fun. It's a fun way for me to still talk about video games. It's the right amount of video games for my life. And then really, right, my main thing is Strong Songs, which is a music podcast that I make, where I just wrapped up year three of that show. Every episode is a sort of dissection of a famous song. This year I did, what, Imogen Heap and Muse Tune, and we did Earth, Wind, and Fire September on September 21st. So it's kind of like I take the whole thing apart, rebuild it for you piece by piece. I learn all the parts. I explain the whole thing. It has music theory and some of that stuff, but it's not like for music experts. It's kind of for anybody, lapsed musicians, whoever. I'm kind of trying to make it accessible as well as including complicated stuff. So the idea is just you'll hear your favorite songs In a new way. You'll hear new things in them. So that's Strong Songs. It's kind of my main thing. And yeah, if people think that sounds good, they should check it out.
Check that out.
Yeah.
Devin just flipped his lid hearing you describe
Devin, I think you'd like the show, man. You should listen.
Matt, tell us what we're going to be doing next week as we close out Cogember.
Next week, we're spending 70 minutes in outer heaven. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, Bucket.
Snake!